You got the tape, play it. So I got the tape. One of the things my home group does is we go to the central office and answer the phones for 3 hours on a Sunday, followed by Miss Kitty's group.
She makes sure we get out of there, you know, so we don't get their calls. But anyway, I played the tape, and I was thoroughly impressed. And so, to make a long story short, I asked Vinny to take care of it, and he did. And we have Ken tonight. There were some discussion, and I won't tell you that everyone agreed with me that that was a good thing to do. I think one of the nice things is we have a little friction going once in a while, you know, and we discuss and argue and talk. No one's got hit yet. Been close a couple times, but. And so one of the things was the money. We had to pay for his trip, to fly him here and pay for his meals and put up the, I have him a hotel room for him. That was a comp provided by the hotel for us. And so we went to the groups. We went to intergroup, and I told him I was coming. And very quickly, I just want to tell you that I walked into intergroup one night, and I'm not usually lost for words. I get excited, and I stutter, and I stamper, and I shake. But I walked in there, and a lady handed me a $300 check from a group. I got like 4 feet, and another lady handed me $300 from her personal checking account. As I was there, the vice chairman of intergroup said, "Bill, before you leave tonight after the meeting, stop. I got a gift for you for the quarterly committee." And after the meeting, I said to her, I said, "Billy, you wanted to donate something." In the meantime, Vinny was getting very nervous. You know, it's great to have somebody nervous. He took care of all that for me. But he didn't think we were going to get the money, and we were quite short. After the meeting, I said to her, "Billy, you have some money for me?" And she said, "Yeah," and she handed me this. I walked out of that intergroup meeting with $1,100. A few weeks after that, the intergroup gave us $500 towards our quarterly. And we raised the money, not only for Ken, but to pick up the coffee that we drink a lot of, the various things just paid it or with the quarterly. Then it happened yesterday. Vinny went out to the airport, picked up Ken, brought him here, and we had some time to talk over dinner, and we went to lunch today, and he keeps me laughing all the time. When one of the prerequisites of getting a particular speaker, as was evident last night if you were here when Bob spoke, that there were some things that we wanted. We wanted not only to have somebody with some humor, we didn't want him to be too serious because we liked to laugh, but we wanted someone to talk about the steps in the program, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how it works and why it works. Without further ado, a very great friend of mine now, Ken Devaney, our speaker.
Hi, my name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic. And since I'm standing in for Father Leo, in nomine Patris, et Filius, et Spiritus Sanctus, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. I'm glad to be here because I enjoy sick people. I hope you all relaxed and got the business of the day set aside, and it's all worked out well for everyone. I'm sure it has. I'm sure that now that it's all done, there'll be no further discussion about it. I don't know how you guys are, but in our group, you know, it's an amazing thing. We take a half hour to get a GSR elected when we have a volunteer. It's just an amazing little deal the way that works. I want to thank Vinny and Bill and Betty and Liz and Doug and Kitty and Cliff and everybody and Billy E. and all the folks I met. You got a great group here. AA's in good hands in Sarasota, Florida, I can tell you that. The deal with me is I had Bob speak last night because he had some education. I'm totally unscarred by education. You know, know, I went to a school where if they had it going on, we'd try to run numbers someplace else. And so it was just a different deal. And thank God you don't need a lot of education. In fact, in some cases, it's really a hindrance to getting sober because it's a vested interest for a lot of folks. I got sober with guys, you say, there's a dead bird, we all look up, you know. Me and most of my friends, we think that Moby Dick is a venereal disease, you know, we just don't know. We're just, Teacher asked my buddy, how do you spell Mississippi? He said, you mean the river of the state. You know, those are the kind of guys, those are the kind of guys that I got sober with. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, and I'm the youngest of seven children, and my dad died from this disease when he was 50, and I've lost a couple of members, family members behind this, so I understand the serious part of the disease. But I'm firmly convinced that what we've forgotten also, many of us, is how to laugh and how to have a good time. And that's what I'm dedicated to, is going out and enjoying life. I have T-shirts at home that say, be a verb. And, you know, even on my sign, it says, be a verb. We got too many nouns, you know. AA is divided into two groups, if you don't know it. It's those who do the work and those that take the credit. So get in the first group, there's a lot less competition, you know, like just get in there and do something. I'm real glad to be here. I had been down to Miami, I guess a couple of years ago, to the state convention. And, you know, last night I was talking with Vinny, who was responsible for getting me here, and I said, the only thing that can destroy this fellowship is ignorance of how good of a fellowship it is. And secondly, I said, is the fact of apathy. And then I asked him what he thought about it. He says, I don't know and I don't care. So you got to be on your toes all the time around here. As I said, I grew up in Brooklyn, and it was one of those neighborhoods you say, how far is it to the subway? And people go, we don't know. No one's ever made it. There was no such thing as private property. You know, kind of, things moved around a lot. All the guys in my neighborhood who had money were called Don. I don't know. And in the streets, they used to have these cute sayings like, money talks, but cash screams, you know. And they also used to say something like to the effect that there's a difference between education and experience. And that when a man with experience meets a man with money, the guy who had the experience ends up with the money, and the guy who had the money ends up with an experience. So go get a lot of experience. So I was primed for AA long before I got here. And it was, and as I said, I grew up at a different time. When I was growing up, safe sex meant lock the car door. You know, it's a... When I hear kids in fourth and fifth grade discuss sex today, I'm embarrassed. We didn't know that stuff until after we were married. In my neighborhood also, we, as I said, not knowing a lot about that, we all propose with the same two words. You're what? You know? I realize we all come from different backgrounds and we have a different frame of references, and so I'll speak from my experience. And the way this normally works is that I use my words and then you apply your meanings. And that way, hopefully, we all get up out of it together. It's like the kid who was from New York who went to visit his cousin in California. And they were both 10 years old, and the kid from California said to his cousin from New York, look at this. He said, what is it? He said, I found a condom on the patio. And the kid from New York said, what the hell's a patio? So we each come from different, you know, different background, so I may use different words, but I think if you drank, you know pretty much about how to get drunk. I don't have to spend a lot of time telling you about that stuff. It's how you get sober. And you know, the simplicity of this program is such that it passes a lot of people by. If you don't have one of these, you should come in possession of it. This is the owner's manual for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't have one, you should get one, because this is the program. You know, a lot of times people advance their opinions about things, and sometimes their opinions are very good for them. They've worked in their life, but they're not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program consists of what's in this book. So you have to be real careful about who you listen to. I mean, out in our area, there are some groups that tell you no sex for the first year. Have you ever seen those folks that go a whole year? They look like a cat on the interstate now. And it's really a disservice, because if you keep the average alcoholic away from sex for a year, by the time he gets back to it, he'll forget who gets tied up. You know, he'll he just won't know. And you know, you can get caught up in that stuff even after you're here a while. A couple of months ago, someone suggested to me that they said, Ken, you couldn't possibly know anything about sex until you've done it in front of a mirror. So I tried it, and I damn near wrecked the car. You know, like Well, you can laugh about it. The thing that threw me off were those side view mirrors. You know, it says objects may appear larger than they really are. See, I could basically sit down now and I'd feel real good, because I love to see people laugh. There's four things about laughter that most people don't know. The first is that you cannot possibly think and laugh at the same time. So when you're laughing, you're not thinking, and I'm doing you a big favor, you know? And secondly is, most alcoholics have forgotten how to laugh. Somewhere along the line, I don't know when it happened, 7, 8, 10 years ago, feeling bad became good and feeling good became bad. It's like you're in denial if you were happy. I don't know what book that comes from. It's usually those guys who go to other programs like Sex Without Partners and, Parents Without Children, all this stuff, you know. And the third thing about laughter is the fact that when you hear yourself laugh, it's like a big flash in your head. This could not be that bad, because I can now hear myself laughing about it. And the fourth thing is that there's nothing more healing or spiritual than laughter, because it allows you to get away from your mind and get close to God. And that's what laughter is. It's God's medicine for the rest of us who've forgotten how to do it. And it's a real important thing. And as I started to say, the simplicity of this program is that if you read the big book and you read it continually, you'll find out that it's written in language that anyone can understand if they don't think. You know? It says in this book, if the alcoholic does not drink, he tends to act much like other men. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. That's why the three words you never want to hear an alcoholic say is, I've been thinking. You know, just... it would scare you. It just should bring shudders to you. Because we have the kind of mind that when we go to a wedding, we want to be the bride, you know? We go to a funeral, we want to be the corpse. And we want to do it humbly, you know? I don't want to be the center of attention, I just want to be looked at, you know? And we can take any solution and turn it into a problem, you know? We scratch shit that just don't itch, you know? And somehow we're always positioning ourselves between a dog and a hydrant, you know, like... And then we wonder why we're damp. And we're most definitely never in the now. When you hear people share, their problems are always yesterday or tomorrow. Their problem is not right now. There are very few problems right now. The problems are always what I should have done or could have done or would have done. And it's in the past or in the future. We don't seem to have problems in the now, and that's why we live in the now. You can think in any dimension, but you can only act in the now. God is very kind to us in that area. It's like the alcoholic who was in Vegas, and he met a woman, and he said he'd like to spend the evening with her, and she said, absolutely not. And he said, I'll give you $10,000. And within moments, they were upstairs on a bed nude, and she said, kiss me on the lips, and he did, and he said, ooh, I don't know. So she said, well, then kiss me on the neck. And he did, and he said, ooh, I don't know. Finally, she said, kiss me on the breast. And he did, and he said, ooh, I don't know. She said, what don't you know? He said, I don't know where I'm going to get the 10 grand. You know, like... You see, that's alcoholic thinking. You're right in the middle of a good thing and you're projecting out a problem. You know? And any time you want to refute any of these statements, just look at the traditions. Tradition 2 in the long form is 22 words. In the short form, it's 32. One of us got hold of it and said, I think I can abbreviate that. And we take credit for stuff we never had anything to do with. If you don't have an alcoholic in your life, you should get one. They're great to transfer guilt to. Alcoholics were born guilty. You know, I think someday Hallmark is going to come out with a card that says, guilt, the gift that keeps on giving. You know? The deal is that it reminds me of that story where Mr. Mouse was out cruising the bars and he picks up Miss Elephant. And he takes her home and they make passionate love all night long. And in the morning, Mr. Mouse gets up and he rubs his eyes and he looks over. And there's Miss Elephant. She's on her back. Her feet are in the air. She's dead as a doornail. And Mr. Mouse goes, wow, one night of fun and I spend the rest of my life digging a grave. You know? You know, if you didn't have anything to do with it, leave it alone, you know, like, don't buy into that stuff. That's why the folks who wrote this book intuitively knew that if there was going to be any chance for living the spiritual program that's talked about and to grow spiritually, we were going to have to make that trip, that journey, out of our heads, where all the problems emanate from, and into our hearts, where all the good comes from. And that's the journey that that book talks about. It's the journey out of the head. If you read Bill's story, he talks about being catapulted into the fourth dimension. That's not a head trip, folks. That's a spiritual experience. There's also talk in that book about we'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We'll suddenly realize. We'll develop an inner resource. We'll develop a vital sixth sense. We won't have to see it, touch it, smell it, feel it. We'll just know it. That's the trip out of the head. And Alcoholics Anonymous has a program that enables you to get the wisdom that's talked about in the Serenity Prayer. And that wisdom doesn't come from logic. It comes from love. And it doesn't come from the head, it comes from the heart. And it doesn't develop from the outside in, it develops from the inside out. And those are the journeys that are talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bob, in his sharing last night, said something that I've heard every alcoholic say in one way or another since I came into the program. And that is, they were going along living their life a certain way, and something happened. Something happened to everybody in this room who's sitting in a chair tonight, who is not drinking, who prior to getting here could not stop drinking. And what you had is a spiritual experience. And it doesn't make any difference whether you know you had it or not. You didn't even know you're an alcoholic. So how can we expect you to know you had a spiritual experience? I don't think so, Ken. Don't you love people like that? You know, you still meet some people, you figure they missed their calling. They should have been hemorrhoids, you know? And with all the books that's written about alcoholism, that's the best that our book can do. Something happened. When the alcoholic drinks, something happens. We don't know what it is. We can't answer the riddle, just something happens. And the reality here for everyone in this room eventually will be, you'll realize that what happened was God, and that's what he likes to be called, not doorknob light, you know. God likes to be called God, otherwise he gets confused. And the God of your understanding intervened in some way at some time in some fashion, and that's what got you in this chair. I can't imagine any alcoholic who was unable to stop on their own merits to be going along and suddenly say, gee, you know, I'm tired of living in this dumpster. I think I'll just go to AA, get my life together. You know? Sounds good. That's not the way it happens. It's usually some trail of traumatic events, and then boom, something happens. And it happens in such a way that the person involved many times doesn't even know. They just know something happened. You hear people share things like, I was in jail, and for the first time in my life, I screamed out in utter desperation, God, do something for me. Well, that's a cry of the heart, and that's a good prayer. And the mind isn't involved in that prayer, and God listens to those kind of prayers. And people end up getting into Alcoholics Anonymous. And then their lives do this 180-degree turn. And the book talks about that in the doctor's opinion. It says, we drank for the effect of it. And now we're living a whole different life because the effect of that life is good. We start being happy, joyous, and free. You know, I don't know how people can say that this isn't about being happy, joyous, and free. We devote two whole pages of this big book to talking about that. It says, we are happy, joyous, and free. You say, well, yeah, does that mean happy, joyous, and free, Ken? Well, let's read it again. The words are tricky, you know. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We know that laughter and cheerfulness serves a point, otherwise the newcomers wouldn't want to come. We have recovered, and we've been given the power to help others. We know that God didn't make our misery, we produce our own misery. And you read those words, and sometimes people get confused with them, so you have to sit them down and say, you know, I know you have that degree from Harvard, but let's just try to follow the book, you know. And people try to read too much into this stuff. It's like, we had to let go of our old ideas or the result will be nil. Oh, okay, which ones do I hold on to? Let's go slow here, you know. Sometimes I visualize alcoholics as sitting on a whale fishing for minnow, you know, like... We had to let go of all our old ideas or the results would be nil. I know those words are big, and I know they're tricky. But you see, as long as you have your old ideas, you have that disease that has the potential to put you back in a bottle. And you're going to have to let go of all your old ideas. That means you come here and you get drained. I see a visual of this when I'm on the plane. When I'm on the plane and I want to use the head, I look at the sign, and sometimes it says occupied. That means I can't go in. And other times it says vacant. And when it's vacant, I can go in. And God, as I have come to understand Him in Alcoholics Anonymous, is such a gentleman, He doesn't come in unless He's invited. And so when I'm occupied with a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with anything, He's on the outside waiting to be invited in. And the minute I want Him in, He's there. And life gets real good. The simplicity of living today is real easy. I love the name of that group, Make Today Count. And the two M&M groups that are vying for authority in Sarasota. Midtown. And Midland, you know. But the deal is that the simplicity of this is that if you just come here and you leave your mind outside, this is a game where losers win and winners lose. You know? It's a game where you have to say, I can't do it. I need some help. Tough words for people to say. But that starts the process of recovery, and it starts it immediately. And if you look at the steps in here, every one of these steps is geared to forming healthy relationships. The first three steps get you right with God. And then 4, 5, 6, and 7 help you form a good, healthy relationship with yourself. 8 and 9 help you form healthy relationships with the rest of the world. And 10, 11, and 12 keep you on track. And it's real, real simple. And you don't have to read a whole lot into this. And you don't have to live tomorrow. You know, in our area, when I work with guys, we talk an awful lot about there is no there or then. There's only here and now. When you get to there and then, it will be here and now. So don't worry about there and then. And every day everybody talks to me, I want to talk about there and then. No, no, no. We live in here and now. You can only live in the now. You take now backwards, it spells one. When you've learned to live in the now, you've won. That's where life is lived. And it's not lived horizontally, jumping from the past to the future. You live it vertically. You stand up and you live totally in this moment. And you allow life to come and get you. I don't know about you folks, but if you're like me, when I was drinking, I was intimidated by life. I was totally afraid of it. And so I said no to it. I didn't want it to come and hurt me. So I held it out here. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you have taught me to say yes to life. Do you want what we have? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to get it? Yes. Are you willing to give up all your old ideas? Yes. We have something, and the book says this very clearly. It says in the book, we have a substitute. You know, it talks about the fact that someday the alcoholic will be at the jumping off point. He won't be able to imagine life with alcohol or without it. And at that point, he'll need something. And the question is, do you have something to substitute for my alcohol? And the book says yes. We have found a way to get out from under. And we're willing to share with you what we did. And if you want to do what we did, there's a good chance you'll get out from underneath too. But you can't hold on to your old ideas and try to do this on a casual basis. If sobriety isn't the main focus, then you're in trouble. You have to be willing to make it your main focus. You folks that are involved, it's your main focus, obviously. And it doesn't make any difference what happened yesterday. And it doesn't make any difference if you screwed something up. We're counting on it, you know? I always sit down with guys and I say, you know, I do not like to watch the news. In fact, I never watch the news. Because I like to know what's going on. And when you do watch the news, what comes across on the news is that the air we breathe in California, particularly, is killing us. It's polluted. The water's contaminated. The foods we eat are full of carcinogens. Any day, you know, an 800-pound, one-eyed halibut's going to come out of the Hudson River and say, I want to see somebody from Dow Chemical right now, you know. And with all that going on, you're saying things like, I don't want to make a mistake. I really just don't want to make a mistake. Go make the mistake. There's absolutely nothing wrong with making mistakes. The idea is try not to repeat them. And when you do make one, have a good laugh. Laugh at yourself, because we're laughing at you. And when you learn to make mistakes and you don't have to rationalize it or lie about it or blame it on someone else, then you get to live life. You get to go and do stuff. and you're not so worried about how you look, you're just happy to be doing stuff. You know, that's what life is. It's a space to grow, and you never get a chance to grow if you're constantly going to inhibit yourself with, I don't want to try anything. Most folks I know are dead at 45. They don't bury them until 70. They just have a long post-mortem. You know, they just, you want to do this? Well, I don't know. In routine, if you want to be close to death, develop a good routine. Routine is as close as you can get to death. Death is a great routine. You just lay there, you know, you just, it's a great routine. And you say to people, well, what'd you get sober for? Well, I got sober so I wouldn't drink, which is always very clever. And you say, but didn't you get sober to go and live life? And it's like, don't sit down. Some people, when they sit down, never get up again. You know, and they're intimidated by each and every day. You know, at one time in my life, I had 4 years in a state institution where I had access to a lot of reading. And I seemed to have an adequate amount of time to do it. And the thing that I can tell you factually is that 97% of the people who die in this country die laying down. So when my alarm goes off in the morning, I get up. I get up, you know. And I figure if God made a mistake, let him live with it, you know. And as soon as I'm up, I go screw something up because I don't want to lose my skills, you know. I want to go and do something. And I don't know, it seemed a couple of years ago that just getting up wasn't enough for me. So I went and got the tape from Rocky. Some of you may have heard it, the theme song from Rocky. Now people say, why did you choose that theme song? Because in that movie, the first one, not all the garbage since, but in the first one, all Rocky wanted to do was go the distance. He didn't want to be the champ. He just wanted to go the distance and not get knocked out. And so that song means a lot to me. And so when I get up in the morning, I sleep in the buff, I put on the theme from Rocky, I get out my trampoline, and I stand totally nude in front of the mirror, and I jump up and down from the theme from Rocky. And I told that story in Greeley, and they gave me a Stetson, so now I wear the Stetson. And I figure I start out the day laughing at me, I'll catch up with you later. And it's amazing how different people get different things out of that scenario. A woman, after I shared one night, came up real petite and said, do you ever hurt yourself? And of course, I'm very humble. I said, hell no, honey, that's why God invented duct tape. Just slap that baby on and her off and run. I bet you there's a run on duct tape in the morning. I mean, little hardware store will be tapping out in Sarasota. But the idea is to go and have fun and live life. And Bill Wilson was asked one time, Bill, when you talk in the big book about rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, what path are you talking about? What do you mean by that? And without hesitating, Bill said, the path I'm talking about is the path of freedom. Freedom from the bondage of self. Freedom from the bondage of self-centeredness. Freedom from fear. And the only way to get that freedom, folks, is to take it. Freedom is never given, it's always taken. And if you look around the world today with the walls coming down and so forth, people are reaching out and taking their freedom. And if you want your freedom, you take it by taking the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it mentions freedom several times in the book. Bill talked about being free. Talks about being happy, joyous, and free. After our fifth step, it talks about we'll walk through an arch to freedom. You know, there's freedom mentioned a great deal in the book. And the process here is to get free. And it's to get free from stuff that never worked before. Some folks come in with the misconception that they're going to have to learn a bunch of new stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. And really what you're going to have to do is unlearn a bunch of old stuff that never worked for you. You're going to have to let go of old ideas that never worked. And somehow they've become entwined in your life and they just become a part of you. and you let them go. And you know, some of the things you'll remember most vividly never happen. You know? You've told the story so much you believe it, you know? And the deal is that you have to come face to face with that truth. And truth doesn't come on the installment plan, it comes all at once. One moment you don't know it, and the next minute you know it. And you know it because you're willing to be open to it. And you're open to it because you take the steps. When you go through steps 4 and 5, you begin to smash the illusion of who you were and what you were doing out there. And in step 4, you put together who you were in reality as best you can. And in step 5, you share it with another human being. And you not only pick up a little bit of humility, but for the first time, you begin to attack that ego that has killed most of us. And the ego is allowing us to pretend to be somebody we're not. Who we are is so much more than who we pretend to be. And that's why when you're in AA for a while, it gets so easy because you begin to find out, hey, I was okay all along. I just didn't know I was okay. So not feeling good about who I was, I made up this make-believe person. And then I lied and did all this stuff behind that make-believe person. And in the 4th step, it begins to attack that ego because fiction and fact cannot survive together. So the more fact you introduce in your 4th step, the more that fiction is done away with. And the more that fiction is done away with, the more freedom you feel. And it gets to a point after a while where life gets real simple. You're living totally in the now. People say, what do you think of this or that? And I tell them I don't think about it. I have no control over it. You know, it's like being in a plane and they tell you you're going to be late. People say, well, what do you do then? I read, you know. What am I going to do? Hijack the plane? Take me where I'm going. You know? And we get lost in that fiction and in reality. It's like Mr. Lion. You know, Mr. Lion was prancing through the woods and he went up to Mr. Panther and he said, who's the king of the jungle? And Mr. Panther said, you, Mr. Lion. And he said, don't you forget it. Then he went over to Mr. Tiger and he said, who's the king of the jungle? He said, you, Mr. Lion. He said, don't you forget it. Finally, he went up to Mr. Elephant and he said, who's the king of the jungle? And Mr. Elephant picked him up by his tail, winged him over his head 5 or 10 times, and threw him 50 feet through the air and off a tree. And Mr. Lion got up and said, yo, just because you don't know the right answer, that's no way to behave, you know? And that's what we do here. We tell ourselves the story so much, we think it's true. And any time I get confused about life, I go watch kids. You know, the book talks about the fact after step 2, it says, we'll be reborn. It doesn't say we'll be born. It says we'll be reborn. We were sent out from the home office okay. You know? It's our friends and relatives that try to help us. That got us like this, you know? I mean, in my neighborhood, if they found you dead in a car, somebody would say, hey, he found so-and-so dead in the car. And the old-timers used to say then, not in AA, they'd say, hey, he fell asleep in the car, deserved to be shot. You know, like, that's the way it was. Gun control was hold it with 2 hands. And the deal was, is that you grow up with a set of values that suddenly take you away from who you really are. People start telling you who you are. You're this religion, you're this race, you're this, this, you're this, this. And the more they tell you, the more disconnected you become from other people. And when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you haven't reached this point yet, you will, that after you're here a while, you'll find out we all swim in the same water. We all swim in the same water. Either we're all God's kids or none of us are God's kids. There's no breaking this down. Either we all are or we all aren't. Either God is or he isn't. It gets to be real, real simple. And I love the old timers because like the kids, they kept it simple. I can remember calling my sponsor and being a weeper and a whiner and going on about something. Because when I got here, I had a few things. I wasn't on a winning streak. I was living with my mother in a senior citizen place. I'd been there so long I could use the walker, you know. My wife and kids had moved out of state. My wife had filed for divorce. I was in the process of going to jail again. I had a habit when I was drinking of finding things before people officially lost them. And I would say all this to my sponsor, I'm going to jail. He said, good, that's where you belong. My family's gone, good, this way you'll stay focused on your recovery. I don't have anything. He's good, you don't respect or you're not grateful for anything. And then he'd always end up saying the same thing, hey Ken, maybe you'll get lucky tonight and die, and he'd hang up. And that always gave me something on the other end to contemplate, you know, like there was many a time he was off the phone and I was questioning his ancestry, like, you know. And then at the meetings they'd say, well, you know, you got a good sponsor. He's warm, sensitive, and understanding. I said, yeah. Maybe between 9 and 10, after 10, he's a whole different guy. And if you're going to sponsor people, please, please do them and you a favor. Learn to be a listener. Don't jump in there and try to answer all their problems. In fact, don't answer any of their problems. Because first of all, they probably don't know what the problem is. And you don't either. And if you jump in and give them an answer to a problem they don't have, you've got them working 2 years on something that never bothered them in the first place. It's like the guy who was 86 years old who showed up at the sperm bank. And the nurse said, sir, you're 86 years old. You couldn't possibly be here to leave a deposit. He said, I'm here to leave a deposit. So she said, okay, take this jar, go down the hall, fill it up, and bring it back. So after about a half hour, he didn't come back. She got nervous. She went down. She opened the door. And she looked at this guy. He's all ruffled in the corner. Looks like he'd been wrestling with a gorilla. And he looked at her, and he said, miss, he said, I've used my right hand. You know her. He said, I've used my left hand. He said, I even banged it off the wall. He said, I can't get the lid off this jar. You know, like, they saw something good in it. And you're attracted to that. You're not attracted to anger. You know? If you're standing there and the guy next to you has on his arm Born to Kill, you know, and he says that, you know, he killed everybody at home just because they happened to be there, you're not really attracted to that kind of person. It's not like, hey, come on with me, we'll go to a meeting. You know? It's like, I'll see you outside, you know. It's a whole different mean. And so the deal is that you just learn to be the person that they talk about in the big book, and you find out you don't have to become anything. You know, what we have here, which holds this whole thing together, is love. And love is the most powerful force in the world. And what love is love is the process whereby we lead you gently back to yourself. And you get to know you for the first time. Because all along you've been pretending to be somebody you're not. And as I said before, what you are is so much more than what you pretend to do. When you get someone and you see them after a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they brought in all this garbage. You know, I relate AA to coming down the road of life and you're taking all your garbage and you're in a station wagon, and as you're done pillaging and using it, you throw it in the back. And you do that all your life. And AA is hitting the brakes. And all that stuff that you had in the back, you know, it makes this mass movement forward and it starts banging off the windshield and you start dealing with it and you look at that as though that is the problem, and it is. It's the immediate problem and it has to be dealt with. But after you get all that stuff cleared up, you catch your breath and you say, wow, I'm done. No, now you just start, because now that you got rid of all that stuff, you can really get going on the problem, which is the driver, you know. That's when you can start doing those things that help you become what you should have been all along. And it gets real easy. And you see, people in AA, we just don't know how to let go to some of that stuff. You know, I relate it to someone being thrown from a horse and they grab the stirrup. And they're being dragged around the Kmart parking lot.
and it's just been re-graveled. And they're hitting every speed bump. And people who love and care for you are yelling out things like, let go. Let go. And you're responding with, who, me? And we just don't know how to let go. Instead of letting go, they start taking seminars on how to enjoy the ride. You know, it's like... And it goes on and on and on and on. And you say, all you have to do is let go. And this is a good program. If you're tired of beating up on you, this is a great program. If you're done drinking, this is a great program. If you're not done drinking, this is a torturous process. A torturous process. And the whole point here is to get closer and closer with what has always been within us. You know, in the doctor's opinion, it says that if you're going to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, you are going to have a psychic change. Now, being unscarred by education, I went and looked that word psychic up. It comes from the Greek root word meaning soul. This is a soul sickness, folks. It talks about when the spiritual malady is overcome, we'll straighten out physically and mentally. We have soul malnutrition, but fortunately, malnutrition is reversible. And when you come in here, you have no idea what it's about. You're so busy trying to pretend and accomplish, you lose track of the fact that you're a human being. Most of us, when we got here, were humans doing. We didn't know anything about being a human being. You know, someone said, slow down. We didn't know what that meant. You know, I'm unscarred by education, but I read that when a rhinoceros is born, a rhinoceros has already reached the quintessence of rhinocerosity. I just like to say that. I wish Sister Therese was here from the fourth grade. She never let me out. But that's what it is. When we're born, we're not complete. We're just starting on the road. And we come as infinite potential. And that's what life is. It's a space to develop that potential, whatever it is. And it doesn't necessarily mean accumulating anything. It means being something. It's a big difference. And life gets real, real easy here because when you wake up in the morning, it's not about I have to run out and pretend and gather up. I go out and I'm of maximum service to other people. And in working with other people like you folks do here in service work, if you do that continually and you work with other people, God has the game rigged. You'll never go without. You'll never go without. If you sit down every day and try to work out your problems, God love you. You know, you're in bad company. And the thing is letting go. And the folks who put the book together put it together so simple that, as I said in the reading, we sometimes lose track of it. I had a chance in 1981. I had been sober 11 years, and I went through a divorce which ended a marriage of 22 years. And suddenly, I found myself in a whole position, starting from a point I never thought I'd have to face. You know, and I felt like Ricky Nelson in a Michael Jackson world. You know, like a... I don't know about you, but when I grew up, they were playing songs like Till the End of Time. I'll be loving you always. Now they were playing Beat It, Whip It, Choke It, Step On It, Kill It, you know? And I wasn't too sure I wanted to find out what it was, you know? And then I had a guy come into my business at that time. He was a consultant, a time consultant, and he sat down, and my partner and I, and he said, if you let us follow you around for a month, at the end of a month, we'll be able to increase your business 40, maybe 45%, minimum 30%. He said, wow. And he says, now, where do you get your clients? I said, from God. He said, can you run with that? I said, yeah. I said, I go out and I do something that's totally unrelated to what I do to make a living, and when I come back, the phones are ringing. So So he kind of left in a hurry. We never got a chance to work on him for a month. But that's what's happened for me. As I stand here tonight in front of you folks, I can say with the greatest degree of honesty that I can muster that my life has worked out in a way that I would have never imagined it to work out. It's worked out so much better than I would have thought it, and it worked out so much better for the people around me who cared for me and want to be involved with me. It's just worked out, and it's worked out not trying to work it out. Each day I just get up and go with the day, and like the one group said, make the day count. I love that kind of stuff. You know, I have T-shirts that say, leap before you look. Scares a lot of people, you know. But by the time you think about it 8 months, you could have tried it 6 times and you'd know. People are inhibited from making mistakes because we chastise them. But if you watch people and encourage them to make mistakes and say, go and make a mistake. It's not a mistake because you learned something from it. Now you have experience. You know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and science are exact opposite of the same coin. Science sets up an experiment and it's very objective. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we set up an experiment and it's very subjective. They call what they do observation. We call what we do meditation. They call it an experiment. We call it experience. They teach us to go out and understand the environment around us. And here you learn to go in and be peaceful with yourself. So no matter what's happening, you're okay. You hear people say, it's okay. And it is just another name for God. When you and God are on a good working relationship and it's okay, everything's okay. And if you're not okay, nothing's okay. I've heard people share things like, I'm coming home from the same job, to the same house, in the same car, on the same road, in the same traffic, but today it's all okay. And what that is a perception of wellness about what's going on in your life. And most people don't deserve any more because they're not grateful for what they have. The old-timers used to say simple things like, did you ever notice, I love old-timers, they were always so wordy. And they would say, did you ever notice that those that are grateful are happy, joyous, and free, and those that ain't? Then they tell you things like, get up in the morning and go participate in your own life, but try not to interfere in it. Where are you guys getting this stuff, you know? All I want to do is not go to jail and not drink and try not to get a facial in the barroom anymore. You know, I always got those barroom facials. When I first came into AA, my nose was broken. I was all kind of banged up. It looked like I was in a gang war. My gang didn't show up, you know? And part of my insanity was, this little piece of real estate that I'm standing in isn't worth anything. I'll give it to anybody anytime tonight. But there would be a time in the bar where some guy would push you and tell you you had to move from that space. And suddenly it would become the most important piece of real estate in the world. I would die for this piece of floor that 2 seconds ago had absolutely nothing to do with me. And then I'd be in some hospital emergency room at 2 a.m, and they'd be straightening my nose one more time saying, you can go home soon. And I'd be going, it's all right. Where's the other guy? He went home long ago, you know. He just brought you in so he wouldn't go to jail for homicide, you know. And that's the way my life was. You know, I had that capacity, and I see people do it here to get caught up on things. They can't let go. I call it milking a mouse, you know. You see people do? But Ken, if I let go of this, I'll have nothing to work on. So they continually milk the mouse. And it's a lot of activity, but there's no return, you know? There's absolutely no return. And we have we have egos that just shut off everything else. And as Chuck C. used to say continually whenever he shared, you learn to do stuff here for fun and for free and to not be involved with how you look so much as what you're doing. You know, ego gets in the way. It cuts down. Our book talks about having honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And you don't have those things when you're all full of ego. It's like the admiral who was out with the fleet. And the watch commander came to him and said, there's another boat off our port side. He said, tell him to turn 10 degrees. And the watch commander came back and said, he said to tell you turn 10 degrees. And the admiral, all puffed up with himself, said, you tell him I'm the admiral of the fleet. The watch commander came back and he said to tell you he's a seaman first class. And now the captain, admiral, really puffed up with himself. He says, you tell him I've got an aircraft carrier. And the watch commander came back and he said to tell you he's got a lighthouse. See, you guys understand all that stuff. Which leads me to believe that maybe just one or two of you may have dealt with ego in the past. In 1983, I decided I wanted to go and do something different. Didn't know what it was, but I prayed about it. And I had this intuitive thought. And the intuitive thought was to go and work in the hospice program in San Diego. And that's working with people who are terminally ill. And in San Diego hospice, they don't take you in the program unless you have less than a year to live. Your diagnosis has to be less than a year to live. And so the deal was, as I went through the training, and the very first guy they sent me out to see was very angry. He was 71 years old. He was dying of lung cancer. And he said that he was very unhappy, and I tried to get out of him what was making him unhappy, and he was just too angry to share it, he said. And finally, after some coaxing, he said, okay, I'm going to tell you what's making me angry, but you're not going to understand. And he said, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been sober for 39 years. And I should have received a birthday cake in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm too weak to go to the meetings. And I'm only saying this because it's a direct quote, otherwise I wouldn't share it from the podium. I said, no shit. And I said, well, I'm 13 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is direct quotes also. He said, no shit. So they had him on liquid morphine at the time, and I said, you still know how to get buzzed on that stuff? And he said, yeah. I said, well, buzz up. I'm going to take you to a meeting and give you a cake. So he buzzed up, and I took him to a meeting, and I gave him a 39-year cake. And God, my God, who has a great sense of humor, sometimes he likes to do bang shots just to show off. He lived another whole year, and I got to give him a 40-year cake. Now, I get guys who call me all the time, whimpers and whiners. Ken, she's leaving. Ken, I lost my job. So I'd say, come on over. And I'll spend some time with you, but I got a commitment to this guy, so we'll have to go down and see him. So I'd take him down to see Stanley. And I'd go in the room, and at the end, Stanley had had a colostomy, so he had the bag, and he had the oxygen mask, and he had IVs running in and out. And I'd take this little bozo in there, and I'd say, Stanley, this guy's having trouble with the program. And Stanley would whip that oxygen mask off, and he'd say, wow, are we lucky, sober another day at Alcoholics Anonymous, living in San Diego. And he'd go on for 2 or 3 minutes till the oxygen ran out. And we'd stay and visit with him for 45 minutes or an hour, and then we'd leave, and we'd get out in the hall, and I'd say to this little bozo, now tell me about your problems. And the reality is, folks, that most of us don't have problems. We can manufacture a lot of stuff. But if someone would have meet you tonight face up and tell you all the tests we're in, and you have 2 to 3 months to live, it's amazing how your perception of what's bothering you would change. You know? And I was doing this in a way to, because I'm so involved with AA, I was doing this as a way maybe to get into something else. And as I said, God, my God, has a great sense of humor. Any God that can give man his sexual peak at 20 and woman hers at 40, let him work with this. But as it turned out, every person I've worked with now in the hospice since has been an AA. Every single one. People have heard me share, and now when they have someone who's going down for the count, they give me a call. Now, that's not for everybody, but I'll tell you, it keeps me focused, because it's an amazing thing when you're talking with someone who knows that they don't have any need to impress you anymore, and they don't have any BS left, and they don't have any ego left, and they're just trying to get through this thing as best they can, and they're terribly afraid at times, and they're terribly unsure of what comes next. And it's amazing how the level of conversation changes when that arises. And so if you have someone in your life tonight that for some reason you haven't talked to or haven't been around or just dropped out of sight from, or maybe had something with them several years back and even forgot what it is, I strongly suggest you give them a call right after the meeting. Sure surprise them. And tell them that whatever it was is no more. And as a result of that, make you whole with them, so that if anything should happen to them, you don't have to carry around a bag of stuff about I should have, I would have, I could have, I'm sorry, and all that kind of stuff. It's a terrible thing to watch people try to make their amends to someone who's no longer here. So take good care of one another, because we're only on loan. And laugh and have a good time, because that's what this is all about. I don't know what the time is here, but I don't think you guys go that long, and you don't even have a 13-step dance. See, in California, after we have one of these, we have a 13-step dance. And while you're talking, you watch the guys, they're sighting out their targets. You know? And the women are doing the same thing, you know. In California, they don't look for Miss Right, they look for Miss Right Now. Maybe even miss perhaps, you know. I go to weddings anymore where the only thing they have in common is neither one of them were raised by wolves. I sponsor a guy who's been married so much he's got rice scars, you know, he just got these. But the deal is we're only on loan to one another. And we don't know. None of us sitting here tonight know when we're going to be checked out. Nobody knows when they're going to get their ticket punched. But the deal is if you live each and every day to its fullest, I can tell you from experience from people I've been with right there at the end and seen them pass over, is that when death comes, if you've lived your life each and every day, when death pries open your hand, you'll have nothing to give, because you will have lived it. And that's real, real important. I'm going to tell you a little story about my mom who didn't have much education and raised a bunch of kids and did a real good job. There was never any doubt as to my mom loving us. And if someone had to go without, she went without. And she always, you know, I don't know about the hereditary part of this program, but in my family we're divided into two groups. Either you're in AA or you need it. My mom used to say the only time she heard one of her kids say no to a drink is if they misunderstood the question. She's passed away now, but she always used to say, you know, your sobriety date is July 5th, and that's very good because you did everything on a 5th. And she also used to say, drunk or sober, you're no day at the beach, you know. I don't know why. But she used to tell this great story, and this story is about Johnny. And Johnny went to a parochial school. And every day when he got there in the morning, he would jump into the church. They always build the church next to the school. That's how they do it. They got the game fixed. And Johnny would kneel down and he'd say, "Hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here." And then he'd boogie out. And then he'd go back in at noontime and after school and weekends and holidays and summers. And he always said the same thing. "Hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here." And as my mom said, when he got to be 12 years old, he contracted polio and he was dying. At that time, they had no cure. And the room was full of his friends and chums and family members, his parents. And my mom said a voice was heard to say, "Hello, Johnny. This is God. I just want to tell you I'm here." And that's what sobriety has been for me. It's being there. When I was drinking, oftentimes people I loved and cared for reached out for me to do something with them or for them, and I was totally unable to do it because I was drunk. But today, when anyone anywhere reaches out, I go. And if I don't go, one of you goes. And it doesn't make any difference who goes because we all have the same message. Come on in. You're okay, and it's even going to get better. And we make people feel welcome, and we make people feel at home, and we give them back the respect that they lost a long time ago, and we make them part of this great fellowship. And that only happens if the meetings are there and the doors are open, the coffee's on, the lights are going. So it's real important for each and every member to stay active. The most important person in this room tonight is sitting in your chair. They're also, the person sitting in your chair is the solution to all your problems. Yeah. And you just learn to get going in this thing and be very easy on yourself and be easy on other people. People say sometimes, "Ken, when you share, give them hell." And I always respond the same way. I don't have to give them hell. They already know about that. I want to give them heaven. And heaven here is when you get to wherever you're going. I'm sure when we all get returned home, as we will someday, and we stand before whoever it was who sent us out, we're only going to be asked two questions. The first question is, did you become you? Did you become authentically you? And that's going to be a tough question for a lot of folks to answer. And the second question is going to be, did you have a good time? I gave you everything you needed. Did you have a good time? And hopefully you'll be able to answer both of those questions in a real positive yes. Because that's what AA is. It's saying yes to life. We've said no long enough. And so I really don't have anything that's super wonderful to tell anybody except that if you're here, you belong here. And we studied this disease for a long, long time, and we noticed there's a very high correlation between drinking and getting drunk. We've had a lot of detailed surveys. And that it's much easier to stay here and grow than to be trying to figure out whether or not you belong here. And don't worry about the miracle. You are the miracle. And you don't have to understand it. You just have to be aware of it. I'm a miracle. I belong here. I paid my dues. There's nothing else really to do in life except to work with others and get on and do something for someone else. You know, I said before that living in the now is when you've won. And if you look at our big book and our program, that's all we talk about is the now. And we say things like, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics. When can you do that? And the second one is, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him. Take good care of one another. God bless you.